Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
It's Mark Grody on 670 The Score, a Radio.com sports station.
What's going on? Anthony Rizzo had an MRI that was, quote, as expected, according to the Cubs. He has rib head inflammation creating back spasms. And David Ross, the Cubs manager, he is hopeful that Anthony Rizzo will not require a stint on the IL. I still want to say DL. And the quote is from Ross, "We're progressing in the right direction." Let's hear what Anthony Rizzo is saying about it. Every year, Anthony Rizzo has back issues where he misses a few games and then he seems to be fine. Like, in the grand scheme of things, it hasn't been a big deal. So here's Rizzo comparing the back to past injuries.
It's all relative. Frustrating just because how physically, you know, in shape I felt like I was coming in. Just can't control the flare-ups, the MRI, getting kind of what we knew, just confirming it. So just kind of getting to calm down and get back out there as fast as I can.
So, yeah, I was thinking the same thing. There is irony involved in this, in that Rizzo did the thing. He did the thing this year, that thing where an athlete loses weight and shows up in terrific shape, best shape of his career. And you thought that, I mean, to me, the only reason Anthony Rizzo would need to lose weight, like the only reason, would be to take pressure off of the back, because his weight obviously has not hurt him in his career. He is, you know, you could pencil him in every year for 30 home runs and 100 RBIs, and he seems like he becomes a better hitter every single year. Great two-strike hitter, doing the choke-up thing, all that kind of, like, he didn't need to lose weight to be a better baseball player. There's no doubt about it. Sometimes it's just for appearances and to say, hey, I'm still here. Hey, this is how dedicated I am. Like when Kyle Schwarber did it. Remember the Schwarber year when he lost the weight? I'm still here. I lost all this weight. Is that cool? So apparently that didn't necessarily work, if that was the reason that he lost the weight. All right, so let's move on with a little bit more Rizzo here. Here's what Rizzo says he can do, what he can do right now.
The other day we pushed it and tested it and hit live BP and felt good. Just didn't recover the way we liked it to. So kind of just get back to what we've been doing inside internally and strengthening and just doing all the stability stuff to get it to feel better. I mean, felt better today waking up than it did yesterday. So as far as what I'm able to do is pretty much everything. We're not hitting right now just to calm everything, keep everything calm. But once these kind of spasms break, it's kind of like it goes from severe pain to absolutely nothing. So I'm past the severe pain part. I'm not at the nothing stage, but I'm somewhere on the good side.
Yeah, been there, done that. You know, like I said, I think you could probably go back to every single season that Rizzo has been with the Cubs, and there's been that week or two where he's been day-to-day, takes literally 2 to 3 games off, and then he's back in, and it's like, poof, nothing happened, and everything is okay. And he also says, and this is kind of connected to the bite that we just heard, Rizzo says that he is doing everything he can to stay off of the injured list.
I'm tracking pitches. I'll be out there in 15 minutes tracking Chatwood out there and tracking some of the bullpen guys. So I'm seeing them, visualizing, just being on time. You know, hitting live the other day, I felt pretty good with timing on the right track. So, yeah, every game's important. So we got to get off to a good start. And hopefully I'm out there with the guys. I plan on it, but you can't control it and got to be smart.
Yeah. You got to be smart, and even though it's incredibly urgent this season and you can't play games, as in you have to have there's no time to have a slow start this year like there generally is in a 162-game season. Everybody, that's why I was talking about Yu Darvish. Yu Darvish can't come out like he did last year, you know, walking 7 guys to begin the season, then have a handful of games where he had 5-plus walks before he finally settled down. So ultimately, I mean, it's good to hear from Rizzo. I thought it was important that we played some of that and listened to it together. I will just tell you this. I'm not worried. I do think Anthony Rizzo will play on opening day when the Cubs do open their season a week from this Friday at Wrigley Field against the Milwaukee Brewers right here on 670 The Score. I do think that he's going to play. I mean, and if anything, this is good because you're getting the back thing out of the way right now, and maybe you know, won't miss games as opposed to last year. And hopefully it's not a bad sign that he's got the back stuff this early, but maybe he's just getting it over with. I do think he will play. And it's alarming every year when it comes up. Don't get me wrong. It's not just something where you're like, it's his old Rizzo with his old creaky back. It sucks, but he has gotten past it, and it's not like he's 35 or 40. He is 30. So I think Rizzo, I do believe he's going to play. He sounds good. They're trying to keep him off the injured list. I expect him to be starting at first base when there are 0 fans at Wrigley Field next Friday night. One other thing from Rizzo, not associated with his back injury. I thought this was interesting. And I actually haven't heard the cut. I just saw the description of it. So we're all going to listen to this together. Rizzo thinks some Cubs will opt out.
We are in a pandemic. We are all at risk. We are all want to play baseball because that's what we love to do. And we have an opportunity to bring joy to a lot of people at our home and through these tough times. So, but we are all human. And If guys start testing positive left and right and this gets out of control, I'm sure you'll see some guys opt out. But I think what Darvish said yesterday, him coming in and being kind of, you know, on the fence and seeing how amazing the Cubs have been with all the protocols and getting on top of everything. And I mean, credit to all of our guys for the most part for coming in and staying safe on, you know, obviously you can't control, you go pick up something at the grocery store and you get it, you can't control that, but as being as safe as you can away. So, you know, I think generally a lot of people want to play and that's what we want to do. And it's just about staying safe.
Yeah, that's number one. And I haven't really heard anybody who has said anything other than, yeah, we get it if you opt out. I mean, that kind of, you know, if you're in San Francisco and Buster Posey, like, it sucks, but what am I going to say? I mean, he's got little babies. So, you know, same thing for any Cubs, and that is very measured and very rational thoughts from Anthony Rizzo, as always. So, yeah, okay. I get the context that he was speaking about it. The understanding as time goes on. And it is a good thing that Yu Darvish is here because there was some question as to, you know, reading along with what he had been saying before they reported to Chicago that he was very concerned about what was going on and that there was some question as to whether or not he would even join the Cubs at all this year. But he's there, and apparently he's cool with things so far. It is day to day more than anything, man. And considering that we just talked about Rizzo's back issues, this might sound odd. I think that they should extend Anthony Rizzo's contract. The Cubs and Rizzo have just been a good pair. It was, remember, and this is the contract that he is in the midst of, and I don't know, like, if deep down inside Rizzo actually regrets having signed the contract he did, but it was on May 12, 2013 when Rizzo signed that 7-year, $41 million deal. They picked up the option, obviously, for this year, a team option for 2021 as well. He's doing just fine. I mean, it's a $16.5 million pickup. Rizzo is a rich man, but obviously, if he had waited, he could have gotten a ton more money. But remember, it was not an easy start to Rizzo's career, having slumped badly when he came up with San Diego, and it wasn't perfect right away with the Cubs either. He has realized all of his potential, every ounce of it, during his Cubs stay. But I do wonder what would have happened if he had waited just a little bit longer. And I bet you Anthony Rizzo does as well. So in other words, the Cubs are getting close on Rizzo. He could become an unrestricted free agent after the 21 season, or the Cubs could work out an extension. And I promise you, nobody's asking him about it, and I understand. But it's probably on Rizzo's mind now. And I'd like to see the Cubs tack on two or three, at least make an offer to Rizzo in that realm. I think that his game, hopefully, and we'll get through this back thing. Like I said, I think it's going to be typical of what it has been in past years where he will play. I do think that his game will age well. He's a good hitter, period, one who studies the game and gets better at that every year. He's a good fielder, no doubt about it. He's not fast, never has been. So he lost a step the second he came into the league. So we don't have to worry about that. He does not rely on it. And then some of the things, and I put these towards the end, but I have learned in my career, because I used to not put as much into this. He's becoming more of a leader. There is that leader aspect to it, or the respect. I don't know if Rizzo is a classic leader, but how about just a highly respected guy? And like, you got to go through Anthony to get things in the Cubs clubhouse. He's not a boisterous guy, like telling guys what to do and where to be and all. Rizzo is more playful, fun-loving, friends with everybody. Like the cool kid who's friends with everybody. That's who Rizzo is in the Cubs clubhouse. He's not like David Ross was. He's not like, John Lester or Jason Hayward. I mean, Jason Hayward is a leader, like vocally and helping guy, putting an arm around a guy. That's just not Rizzo, even though so many people wanted to project that on Rizzo because he once took on the entire Cincinnati Reds dugout. I want him. He's our leader. But he is the face of the team. I'll say that. And then lastly, it obviously a further marriage between Anthony Rizzo and the Chicago Cubs is good for public relations. So, and like, I do put that last. I'm just saying, I know that sounds weird to make that an important part of it, but I'm saying what the team might consider, what Rizzo might consider. But as with so many other athletes, I don't know what the player is thinking. My guess would be, just from hearing Rizzo and getting to know him a little bit on my 3 years on the beat, he seems to legitimately love being a Chicago Cub. I don't think that that's going to manifest itself in by way of like any kind of home team discount. It shouldn't. I mean, you shouldn't ask players to do things like that. He seems like a guy who loves to play here and being a part of it. I know he's from Florida, and maybe, Miami sticks its head up every once in a while and builds a team before they break it up again. Could Miami eventually come after Rizzo? I don't think he'd want to play there. And I always say that because every time, again, on my tour with the Cubs, it always seemed like a big pain in the butt for him to play there. I know he loved, is close with his family, loved seeing his family and friends and all that kind of stuff, but there was always just so much going on for him when he would, that he felt responsible for when he'd go back to Florida and Miami. I don't know that he would want that on an everyday basis. And I think that that's similar to a lot of players. That not every player, a lot of players do, not every player wants to play in their home team just because sometimes life is just better on the road in many different aspects. But I do think I would like to see, and they've got a lot, the Cubs have a lot of, you know, questions to ask about their core and what exactly their core is going forward, and if they still are going to make an earnest effort in this offseason after this year to trade Chris Bryant to continue to replenish the minor leagues and the big league club and do this somewhat of a rolling rebuild. I'd like to see them keep Rizzo around, and I definitely think if I had to pick one more guy, it would be Baez. Just because I do think there's that next level, and he plays on the dirt. So, you know, you want a guy that is that talented, a true, we throw five-tool player around way too much, but Baez is a five-tool player. So, and I think he is a guy that if you want to give the money to, he's the other one. So it'll be interesting to see how it goes down for the Cubs, but those are two names that I'd like to see the Cubs keep around for long-term, Rizzo and Javier Baez. 312-644-6767 is the number. When we return, we are going to talk about sports and drugs. It's next. I'm Mark Grody on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
I love White Sox game. You're welcome to. That's also
White Sox.
Part of my.
What's that?
It's a baseball team.
Where?
Chicago, where I'm from.
You're from Chicago. Today, I just got so high from that. I mean, that was what you live for in life.
Sure, it was the game.
Yeah, absolutely, man. These last 2 days have been a struggle for me.
Jason Benetti and the one and only Bill Walton. You put your weed in there, man. So, let me just give you the headline of an article in The Athletic written by Marcus Thompson II. And I'm Mark Grody I here on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. And for Joe O, great to have you with us here on a Wednesday? Wednesday. The name of this article is Bongs, Blunts, and Balms, The Secret to Surviving the NBA Bubble. Here we go.
It's the weed.
Yeah. You put your weed in there, man. All right. So, you know, let me read a little bit of this to you. Sit back, relax, hold it in. There we go. So this article reads by Marcus Thompson, The Athletic. One of the most pressing questions entering the bubble in Orlando did not get asked publicly, but it was asked. Faced with the prospects of an extended period of isolation or in isolation as the NBA resumes its season in a Disney World confinement, some players will need the answer. The question is too critical. How long will a pound last? Yes, the kind of pound that you're thinking of right now. There are, this is again continuing to read this article, there are 453.5 grams in a pound. How many sessions can you get out of that? Heavy smokers pack a blunt with about 2 grams per.
So wow!
About, I just like that the math is being done. So that's about 227 blunts, yo. And he doesn't write yo. 6 of the 22 teams will be in the bubble a maximum of 40 days. Of the remaining 16, half will be going home no later than 53 days in. 4, the number 4, could stay for up to 67 days maximum. The teams in the NBA Finals could end up being in the bubble for a maximum of 82 days, with or without weed, yo. So for players who are eliminated first, a pound of weed is more than enough. But for players on teams that make the conference finals or the NBA Finals, that's getting down to about 2 blunts a day. And that might be cutting it close. All right, now this is a quote here, and I'll tell you who is saying this along the way. Bring more than you think you're going to need, says Al Harrington, an NBA veteran turned cannabis advocate who, through his company, Viola Brands, or Walla Brands, promotes social equity in the marijuana industry and seeks to destigmatize cannabis. Aren't we all trying to destigmatize it? You might have, and this is him talking again, Al Harrington, you might have that teammate who's never smoked and might want to try it since they're stuck in the bubble. This would be a good time to begin your pot smoking career. So you might be supplying other people. All right, so that is the writing right there in The Athletic. So here, this is me talking now. Here's the dealio. The NBA is, while they're in the bubble for these games this year, whatever it turns out to be, they will not test for marijuana nor other recreational drugs while they're in the bubble. No drug testing. And when you really think about this, that is absolutely amazing. They aren't gonna drug test. That's amazing because we have spent so much time in our lives, whether it is as fans or as broadcasters, wagging our fingers and reporting on players who have gone down for smoking weed, or there are rumors about somebody smoking marijuana. For crying out loud, there was once a red flag placed on Dan Marino for smoking weed while he played college football. His draft status actually went down because of the fact that he smoked weed while playing at Pittsburgh, and he turned out to be one of the best quarterbacks of all time. Still the best arm that I've ever seen, at least. Dan Marino. Accuracy was pretty good, too. Mark Duper and Mark Clayton and all, but they were bums. Anyway, yeah, so it's just funny how something at one point in the time we took so seriously, and marijuana was everybody's dirty little secret that, oh yeah, I've tried it, but in college. And the little marijuana wink, I don't smoke cigarettes, if you know what I mean. Like, it's starting to become destigmatized, and we don't have to talk about it in ridiculous terms anymore like we used to. The little wink, wink, hee, hee, ha, ha. So here we are. The NBA is not going to drug test. And I get it, this won't necessarily be the case going forward. Other sports still test for it. But reporting on it and getting mad about it, it all just seems like a big waste of time from the past. All right, more from the article now. This is back to the article. The players will have so much time to kill. 2 hours is long for a practice normally. Throw in an hour before practice getting treatment, and then what the heck, throw in an hour post-practice getting up shots. That is still a four-hour workday, presuming 8 hours of sleep. And then, the math in this article is just amazing. That still leaves you 12 hours of bubble time. Normally, players have a regimen to fill their days, family, business meetings, errands to run, and that's not going to happen now. So, and I know, man, I know you're thinking, like, whatever, just go hang out. Boredom is a real thing. And I think that many of us at this point, during the virus and stay-at-home orders, I think that all of us have learned that. Think about how life has been for us, having to isolate more and to fill up your day, figure out new routines to, in essence, occupy your brain in a satisfying way, not just doing things to do things, but do things that make your brain happy, and that doesn't have to be smoking weed. Let me be very clear. I mean, I remember when I used to do in a different part of my career, and I'm sure some people listening probably, it wasn't that long ago, I used to do morning updates on what was then the Molly and Hanley show, the morning show at the Score. I was part of that show, and I did updates from 5 a.m. to 9 a.m. So I had a four-hour workday as well. It was a little bit different for me because when you work those hours, and you're going to add napping to the repertoire. But, I mean, I remember having at times when I wasn't napping that, all right, I'm done at 9 o'clock. I used to laugh because I'd be walking out of the Prudential Building downtown Chicago while the flood of people were coming from underground on the red lines and the blue lines and wherever to go to work with their morning face on, and that, you know the morning face where you're like, oh man, this thing is just starting. And there I am, 9:07, on my jolly way trying to figure out how to occupy the rest of my day. And sometimes I didn't do good things with my time, the extra time that I had. So it's good to occupy. And I'm not saying, I'm not advocating necessarily for weed, but it is good when we talk about it this openly. All right, a couple other things here. And yes, I should give my disc, like alcohol or anything, you can kill yourself with this stuff. Kids, if you're listening. So back to the article. We've seen video game systems being carried into the bubble. We know the cards are there, maybe some dominoes, but many are going to need their favorite idle time activity. Even discussing this is taboo, however. As one agent said, you're asking about Fight Club. There's no testing for a reason. It would be a mistake to consider cannabis to be exclusively recreational. The stigma of marijuana as a pastime for the immature and lazy has dissipated with education. It is still that for some people. The situation in which players find themselves is a prime example of how medicinal and therapeutic the kush can be. The bubble is a setup, a mental health obstacle. It's interesting that the writer of this article has got a mental health obstacle. The soaring COVID-19 cases in Florida will add to that tension. So yes, like I said, like alcohol or anything, it is not always good for you. And back to a few more facts from the article here. Technically in Florida, CBD is legal. THC is only approved medicinally. So possession of fewer than 20 grams in Florida is a misdemeanor that includes up to 1 year imprisonment and a fine of 1,000, blah, blah, blah. Possession of more than 20 grams is charged as a felony with possible prison time, Sam heard. And Florida has mandatory minimums. However, hemp was legalized in Florida last July. And since hemp is identical to marijuana, but without the THC, police and their dogs, and your little dog too, can't smell the difference. So it is effectively being decriminalized because prosecutors across the state are dropping marijuana charges and instructing police in Florida to change probable cause triggers. So there you go.
Some weed is legal.
Yeah. Yeah. And it is and has been around here since the new year. And man, you could tell. Like I said, I live in Chicago, so I live in downtown. And like a lot of people in the city, I walk a lot. I try to walk to most of the places that I go, and I do. I spend a lot of time outside. I think every story in Chicago should start with, as I walked down the city street, a waft of marijuana smell blanketed the area. Like, it is, my God. Like, I will say, like, as normalized and destigmatized it is coming, when I smell that smell, I'm still like, oh, what's going on over here? Even if I'm at a concert where it's completely normalized, that first waft of it, you're like, oh, what's going on over here? Somebody smoking a little bit of weed? Yeah, I know that smell. I used to do that in college. Yeah, I used to do that at one point in time. But it is just all over. And I'm not projecting either, like, just because it was legalized, like, people are out in the open, like standing on corners, smoking blunts like it's nothing. And I don't even know if that's legal. Like, is it like alcohol where you're not allowed to do it publicly? I don't even know what the rules are. I know it's not being enforced right now. And God bless you.
It's not legal in public. So you're not technically supposed to be able to walk down the street and smoke a joint. But, I mean, like you said, who's enforcing it? And, you know, even in the loop here, Mark, like coming to work, you'll smell it. Quite often, depending on the time I leave here, what shift I'm working, you can definitely smell it. But yeah, it's not, you're not supposed to do it in public.
Okay. Yeah, I just see people doing it so often without covering it up. And it's always been around. Look, it's Chicago's, in any large city, you can walk through a large city in any decade and probably find the smell of marijuana occasionally, but it is very present right now, and most people aren't even trying to hide it right now. And there's so many ways to administer it too, where you don't have to do it and make it look like you're doing anything. You could look like you're smoking an e-cigarette when you do it, for the most part. But I've seen plenty of people just with poorly rolled joints out in the middle of everything, smoking away and kind of daring the cops to come on down. And you want to give me a misdemeanor? I mean, it's like getting a traffic ticket at this point. But I mean, we're not at the point where it feels completely normalized. That's why I thought this article was just really entertaining. And I didn't read the whole thing, too. If you want to check it out, again, it's in the Athletic. It is written by Marcus Thompson II. The headline, worth rereading, Bongs, Blunts, and Balms. The secret to surviving the NBA bubble. So, can't wait until all these sports converge on us at once, baseball and the NBA and the NHL, Malcolm Subban. Everybody coming together at once. It's going to be very interesting to see if it works out. Are they still doing that other bubble, the Bulls bubble in Chicago?
How you living in a bubble?
Life in the bubble. Did I just dream that, Jordan? Is there actually supposed to be a second NBA? Like, I had this alarming thought yesterday. I didn't want to talk about it on the radio. I'm like, wait a minute, am I the only one who thinks that there's going to be a loser's bubble in the NBA? That's a thing, right?
They're trying their best right now. I don't know if they're going to be able to pull it off. And Chicago seems like the favorite place just because of logistically what they could do. Like, McCormick Center is wide open. So even if you didn't want to take up all of these spots around the city, like Wintrust and Loyola, you could basically create your own bubble at McCormick Place. But I don't see how they play games, Mark. Like, it doesn't make any sense. Why would players come back to play games? I do think it's a good idea as far as facilities go, though. Some of these guys don't have access, like Zach LaVine does with a professional gym in his backyard in Washington, right, to have practice. So some of these guys actually need access to a place. So I think they need to figure something out.
Well, and the one reason for doing it that did make sense to me was that they will not have had an organized practice in way too long, that this at least gives teams that are not in the tournament, so to speak, a chance to be in an organized setting where basketball discipline is being imposed. Hopefully it's not Jim Boylan discipline. But then that brings up that whole can of worms too, that if the Bulls do reassemble and there is in August to be some sort of secondary, CBI type of bubble, that is it going, do you want Jim Boylan getting his paws back on this team if it's not ultimately going to be him? So,
you know, we got Bulls across our chest.
Punching that clock, baby. Look, you know what about Jim Boylan? There's a place for Jim Boylan. It's just not being a head coach in this version of the NBA. There really is. Like, I feel like there's probably a lot of uses for it. You know what? He's probably a really good assistant coach, even in the NBA. Maybe like a small town, middle of nowhere high school, he could be the head coach again. I do. Like, there is value in Jim Boylan doing something. I'm not exactly sure what it is, because you know what he is, if nothing else, he is an earnest man. It does seem like that he is earnest. He has conviction in what he does. So it's not as a head coach of a major market basketball team in the great, big, beautiful city of Chicago. But I do feel like there's value somewhere out there for you, Jim.
They didn't give him a fair shake either. If you think about all the things that happened leading up to him getting the job, he didn't exactly get the fairest of shakes like some other coaches did.
What do you mean by that?
He got dropped in a situation where they endorsed him, I felt like, without actually seeing what he could do as an NBA head coach. And I felt like for the most part, in the first month that he was the head coach, they wanted him to be this old school guy and completely flip the script on Fred. And I don't think to a full extent Jim Boylan was that guy. And I think, like you were saying, kind of just in over his head. But I do think there's basketball IQ somewhere there, because he wouldn't have gotten all the jobs with all the Hall of Fame coaches like he talks about without something.
It's kind of like when a team, I don't know if this is a good analogy or not, but like when a team drafts a player or they acquire a player and they tell everybody that he's going to be great, and then the player sucks and everybody hates the player, when in fact it's the fault of the GM of the team that has drafted the player or overrated them. So I see what you're saying. Yeah, they didn't necessarily put him in a position to win, and they kind of brought him in under at least sort of a false applause and pretenses. So, yeah, that makes some sense. He'll walk away with a lot more cash in his pocket than he probably ever would have had with any other organization. So I think Jim will be fine. If he does move on, we'll see. I'm not burying him yet, and there is value for Jim Boylan. I do believe that. From the 219, what is Grobber's view on legalized weed? I don't smoke, I don't drink, I don't smoke, and I don't eat chocolate. True stories about Grobber. And I believe him. I really do. From the 847, you could walk through Chicago and see legalized beer drinking. Why are you talking about this? What is he thought? Well, yeah, I mean, like in beer gardens, I suppose, outside. But you can't just walk around in Chicago with a... I mean, there are many, many, many ways to get away with it, but technically, if you got a Bud Light bottle, you're not allowed to open that up and drink it on the streets of Chicago unless I'm completely missing something. And it's the same thing with weed. Even though everybody's doing it, it is technically illegal. So there you have it. All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, Let's talk a little bit about, let's do a checkup on the managers in town, the baseball managers, David Ross and Ricky Renteria. We'll talk about those guys next. We're also going to hear from Ian Happ in just a little while here on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Steven, what's it been like, David Ross experience for you so far?
Unbelievable, man. He's built for this job, I think. And, he said something to me the other day, which I think a lot of managers could benefit from, and that's caring about the player first and then the results. And I think when you do that, you put everybody in their right place, and you can feel that. You can feel when it's genuine. You can feel when somebody's trying to fake their way through it. I've been blessed with great managers, and he fits that mold as well, to be able to care for you first and really level with you, but at the same time motivate you to pick up the slack and do your job.
That's Steven Souza Jr. of the Chicago Cubs talking about his manager, David Ross. I'm Mark Grody on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Man, that sounded pretty genuine. That wasn't just, like, you could tell tone with guys when they're just saying or speaking talking points about a manager or a player. And they say, oh, he's great. He's the best. He's great. Like, that sounded like a legit, and it was, a glowing endorsement, no doubt. But it felt very, very genuine. And, yeah, that the managers on both sides of town, David Ross and Ricky Renteria, those are both going to be really interesting stories to watch. And I don't know which one is more interesting. I mean, I'd probably say, because we don't know yet if Ricky Renteria truly is a good manager, because he just hasn't had good rosters yet. Like, he has not been put in a position to win. He just hasn't. But I guess David Ross probably more intriguing, just because he has never done it. Although, It feels like he is the most groomed manager I've ever seen. Like he's been grooming for this job since he was with Boston, and then was it felt like he was quite literally being groomed for this job for a while with his, while he was dancing around and being celebrity David Ross. He was still a part of the Cubs organization on the payroll during spring training and, helping out with guys, being around. Although he was broadcasting for ESPN, he was being groomed for this job or a job of being a baseball manager. And he does. I'm impressed so far, and it ain't nothing yet. I get it. But he and it's not surprising that, because we've heard him speak, but mostly in his life from a player perspective, He has held up that end of the job well so far, and that is the one where you answer questions from the media, you say some real things, you deflect some, and some you lie. It seems like, I mean, that's part of the job. That's part of the job. And David Ross, when he's not watching the game from a rooftop, and because, you know, the COVID tests are not back, when he is around and has been around, and I've heard him on the Zoom calls, he is so far passing the test, and I don't see any reason why he won't. Well, I mean, obviously there are reasons, but I would say like the hardest part of being a manager, and there are many parts to it, but the hardest part is dealing with pitching. Like, that is what managers learn, and you would assume David Ross has shown that he's got that part down, just because of some of the relationships that he has built through his years of being a catcher, and being a personal catcher to John Lester. You know, he understands what a pitcher needs to hear. I'm thinking he understands when he needs to take a guy out, and I hope that none of his relationships comes into play when it comes to taking guys out. I don't think that will happen. And, you know, using a bullpen, that is so hard. And usually, I mean, Joe Maddon would say it all, you're only really as good as what your bullpen allows you to be. You can know exactly where to put guys in, when to take them out. But if the guys that you were bringing in fail, then it does end up being back on you. But he's got the rudimentary part, the basic part of the job down, and that is dealing with pitching. So, and then it seems like he's... You know, we all assume he's got the communication part down as far as communicating with his players. And I'm not talking about the media now. We always assume that he's got that part down because he's David Ross. But you don't know how, we don't know how that will play. We don't know if being a little bit more hands-on, a little bit more micromanaging, I'm guessing, from a interpersonal aspect. Like, Joe Maddon didn't do that. Like, I can tell you from being around Joe Maddon for 3 years doing pre and post, Joe Maddon, I never saw him in the clubhouse. He was only in the clubhouse when he had to be, and usually he was on the road when you would have to walk through the clubhouse many times to get to where he was going and to his office, wherever that was designated on the road. He left guys alone. He delegated authority to his coaches. I don't know that David Ross will be exactly like that. We don't know exactly how that's going to play with the players. I think it's going to be fine, but we don't know that for sure. And then, yeah, Ricky Renteria is that, you know, finally there's a little bit of pressure on Renteria, because it certainly wasn't on him with the Cubs when you had the roster that he had before Joe Maddon swooped in. You know, he wasn't expected to win. He wasn't expected to win with the White Sox up until now. Now you can't have whatever the adjusted rate is for 72 wins. You've got to be better. Again, I'm not picking the White Sox to go to the playoffs, so I'm not putting playoff expectations on Ricky Renteria this year, but there has to be a decided jump this year. And he should, I mean, he's been under the microscope for moves that he has made, managerial moves, but now it's fair. It's fair to actually say, or decide on what value Ricky Renteria actually has. He seems like the type of guy that you want to root for and do good things, especially considering what happened to him with the Cubs. I mean, all things considered, he's handled that well, because that would just suck what happened there. So root for him. I don't know if he's capable of it or not, but at least he has the right cards in the deck to make into a better team this year than they were last year. So there's your checkup on our managers and the Cubs and the Sox. When we return, we are going to do one of Joe O's signature segments. We didn't do you justice tonight with the betting segment at 8:40, but we will do Score Rewind, and we are going to get to hear from tonight Ian Happ, and then a very fired up Mike Florio. So we're going to have Cubs baseball talk and Mike Florio football talk coming up in the 9 o'clock hour. Mark Grody in for Joe O on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
If they don't like it, I don't really give a
Oh, O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.